fans, and welcome into the Green 19 podcast brought to you by JSN Online and PackersNews.com. Well, guys, I guess it's been a little while since we've done this. I just stumbled over my words. But I'm Cassidy Hill, joined by Ryan Wood and Tom Silverstein, as always. Guys, thanks so much for being here as we get back into the swing of things with the Packers.
Good to be here.
Y'all both sounded so excited about that.
This is my natural resting state. I'm always excited.
That's true. And this is Ryan's time of the year. Baseball has started. Mets are back on the field.
Let's go, Mets.
We know we won't be friends for a couple of... Oh, actually, I don't even know if they play the Dodgers this year. I don't think
they play the Dodgers every year.
Oh, I couldn't remember. I did see the Dodgers are coming to Milwaukee in August. I will be there. I'm going to try to be there as a fan and not as a worker.
Good place to watch a game. That's a good park to watch a game in.
I'm excited. Spoon, as we said, kind of getting back into the swing of things with the Packers as well. We had a gauntlet this week with 9 position coaches and coordinators that we spoke to, met some new faces, were reintroduced to some old faces. Let's jump right into one of those guys, Tom Clements, the new quarterbacks coach and the new old quarterbacks coach, stepped up to the podium and said, how have things been? He talked about having only come out of retirement for one thing and one thing only, to help coach Aaron Rodgers back to another Super Bowl. Spoon, I'm going to start with you. Do you buy it?
Yes. I don't think it sounded like he was having a pretty good retirement. Talked a lot about drinking beer and wine and hanging out with the dog.
That's the good life right there.
I'm like, you know, what other reason would you give that up for? Yeah, I think, you know, that and the money, you know, it's good money to coach the, you know, the NFL. So I think that, you know, it sounds like it'll be a fun job for him. Plus, he gets the chance to coach someone young, too. I think that's always exciting for guys. I think they figure that that's a challenge. And so he gets to work with Jordan Love. And that's who he's going to be working with all off season. He doesn't get to work with Rodgers until, you know, training camp. So I think that'll be kind of probably invigorating for him to have a guy like that.
Spoon, before we go any further, actually, on Clements, let's pause. As you just mentioned, he will mostly be working with Jordan Love this season. Guys, if you haven't read it yet, Spoon had a really good piece on what the future of Jordan Love, Aaron Rodgers, and the Packers quarterback situation could look like this offseason, with a lot of really good info on what the Packers are expecting and not expecting from Aaron Rodgers. Can you give us just a quick rundown of that?
Well, you know, I know people are saying that this is news, but, you know, really, that when the Packers negotiated his contract, it was in his contract that his workout bonus was $50,000, and it was for him to show up for 3 days. And basically, they're saying, we'll give you $50,000 to show up at the minicamp. So it's not a surprise. It's not really news. I mean, this has been known since the minute he signed that contract, that he wasn't going to be here all off season. Packers knew it. Rodgers knew it. You know, anybody who paid attention to that roster, to that workout bonus, knew it. So it's not that big of a deal. I think, you know, I've heard a lot of people say that, well, he's going to miss out on, you know, playing with these rookie wide receivers. Well, maybe, but you know, those OTAs are about learning the offense, and Rodgers isn't going to be sitting there, you know, audibling to a play from 2010 in an OTA, you know, where he's going to expect the guy to be able to do that. They're just running the basic offense, trying to get those guys to learn it. Then when they come back for training camp, they go through all those installations again. And so there'll be plenty of time. I don't think it's a big deal at all, really. You know, they'll get used to it. They got to get used to the NFL first, and it'll be good work for Jordan Love too.
Earlier this week, I was at an awards banquet, and Leroy Butler, who we love and work with a lot, was there. And he told me, he said, you know, I think the Packers need to and will be signing a veteran receiver, hopefully before the draft. And one of his reasonings was, he said, you know, you're in a finite championship window, and Aaron Rodgers, and this is Leroy's words, Aaron Rodgers ain't coming back from the Amazon or wherever he is studying some rare beetle just to throw to a couple of rookies. He's coming back to work with someone that can help him win. And as you said, that's going to be like, he's not going to be there. So are you going to just spend all season letting Jordan Love get work with a guy out of, you know, North Dakota State and assume that it'll be your Super Bowl roster? Maybe, maybe not. Something to speculate. Let's get back to Tom Clements. Ryan, were you around during his first run?
Oh, yeah.
It's your first. Okay.
His last year was 16. I was here for the experiment. I was here for the experiment when he was the play caller for the first 12 games of the 2015 season, when Mike McCarthy wanted to dive into analytics. And I think it was the Cowboys game when McCarthy took those play calling duties back, and it just was not going well. You know, Tom Clements was handed
the floor.
Tom Clements was handed a bad card when Jordy Nelson tore his ACL preseason week two that year. But yeah, that was not a long experiment that Mike McCarthy went with.
So, like we said, he talked a lot about, you know, he had no intentions of coming out of retirement. It was wanting to come back to coach Aaron Rodgers. How do you see this sort of marriage working out? Because Tom Clements also talked about watching Aaron Rodgers play over the past couple of years and seeing some of the old Aaron Rodgers, the way he coached him at the very beginning of his career. And that's sort of some of the stuff that Matt LaFleur has rolled into this offense. How do you see this balance working between the three of them?
Yeah, you know, I thought the thing that stood out to me first was that it was Aaron Rodgers that made the call. That's just another example of where this franchise is now in terms of allowing Aaron Rodgers the autonomy to influence things that affect his job. You know, we heard it from Brian Gutekunst at the NFL owners meeting with Davante Adams, how they were in constant lockstep communication during the entire process, what he was thinking before the trade and not after. And, you know, it was Aaron Rodgers that made the call, and then it was Matt LaFleur that followed up with conversations. They met at the Super Bowl, and they got to know each other after Aaron Rodgers made the initial phone call to Tom Clements. I think the big point of interest is going to be how Tom Clements, who is now coaching Aaron Rodgers again, after coaching him in an entirely different system, how he blends and balances what he knows already with this quarterback, with what he has to now learn, which is a new offense. Now, it's not I asked Tom Clements about this yesterday, and it's not entirely new. I mean, there are still old Aaron Rodgers staples and principles built into Matt LaFleur's offense. As we know about the Packers offense, it's a collaboration between the head coach and the quarterback. A lot of leeway that Matt LaFleur gave Aaron Rodgers, especially before the snap, to make audibles and those sort of things. So it's not entirely new, but how he finds that balance between the old Green Bay, as Tom Clements put it, and the new elements that Matt LaFleur has in this offense that has been very successful. And Tom Clements went through the list of reasons. You know, he said he's playing a younger style, a younger Aaron Rodgers style, not physically, but schematically, with all the play action pass, being under center, having true commitment to the run game to set up the pass instead of having this spread shotgun attack that was really just based on getting the ball out as quick as possible and not real conducive to a balance, which was the late McCarthy years. How Tom Clements finds that balance will be very interesting. And you know, Spoon, to your point, I tend to agree. You know, there's this idea, I think, out there that, oh, Aaron Rodgers, if he really wanted to go for a championship, he would be here at the offseason program knowing that there's new receivers. Yeah, I asked Jason Vrabel if rookie receivers, hypothetically, would benefit from having Aaron Rodgers in the offseason program. He didn't say no. He said, I think time will tell. But the thing that Jason Vrabel said I thought was very interesting was, this is, to your point, Spoon, this time of year is about learning the playbook. Now, where I think it would benefit rookie receivers. We know this about the Packers offense. There's the playbook, and then there's Aaron Rodgers' offense. And so learning both, you know, it's not just one offense that they have to learn. I think it would be helpful if Aaron Rodgers was around, but obviously that's not going to happen. And from Aaron Rodgers' perspective, he clearly thinks that the training camp window is enough time to get rookie receivers up to speed on how he runs the offense, on his offense, before week one.
With all due respect to Jordan Love, Tom Clements could not seem more disinterested in the possibility of coaching him.
They didn't even talk before he was hired.
That's funny. Which does kind of reiterate the point that he didn't come out of retirement to coach Jordan Love, but we knew that even before Aaron Rodgers signed back. But all of that to say, Tom Clements talked about Jordan Love. He talked about Aaron Rodgers. He talked about what this offense can look like. He talked about how it could line up and what the scheme could look like. He's not the offensive coordinator, guys. That would be newly promoted Adam Stinovich, who spent his entirety of time talking about the offensive line because that is the position he held last year. Of course, that's the unit he's most familiar with. All of that to ask first, before we get into Adam Stinovich a little bit, is he offensive coordinator in name only, considering Matt LaFleur, Aaron Rodgers, Tom Clements?
Well, no more than or no less than Nathaniel Hackett was offensive coordinator in name, because he doesn't call plays. You know, unless you're calling plays, you're not really a full-fledged offensive coordinator. So, you know, Nathaniel Hackett's expertise wasn't in the run game. It was in the pass game. And so they just flipped the type of coach they have. Now they have a run game guy as offensive coordinator. It's pretty much the offensive coordinator's job really is he's sort of the funnel. So he directs all the assistant coaches. He's sort of in charge of them. He helps, you know, establish practice, what they're going to work on. But he also is sort of the liaison between the coaches to LaFleur. And so he pulls out the stuff, the plays, the things that he thinks LaFleur will want. I mean, LaFleur is involved in everything, but if someone has to kind of pair what they're going to do and use their ideas and pick the best ideas. And that's part of what Stinovich will do. So I think he can be every bit as effective as Hackett. He's a pretty bright guy. He's shown to be a good assistant, you know, a good position coach. He's not as ingrained in the West Coast system as Hackett was. I mean, his dad was invented the damn thing. So it'll be interesting to see what, you know, what happens there. But I think his influence will be just a different style.
He was asked if the first play that they run will be a run play, and he said there's a 50-50 shot. So I guess he's right. There is a 50-50 shot. But one of the more interesting things he talked about was the decision to not start Josh Nijman versus the San Francisco 49ers in the playoffs game. Guys, I know it's April. That game's in the rearview mirror. We're looking ahead. But the decisions that are made, or coaching decisions that are made, can still continue to affect coming seasons or coming decisions or coming plans. All of that to say, Ryan, what did you make of what Stinovich had to say about not starting Josh Nijman? He played three snaps versus the 49ers in that playoff game, and they were all on special teams. What did you make of what he had to say about that decision?
Yeah, I mean, I look at it more as just holding decision makers accountable for decisions that had a pretty significant influence on the way seasons turned out, especially potential Super Bowl seasons turned out. And Adam Stinovich said that it was a decision based on experience. And not only that, but he wanted kind of hard-nosed, kind of tough blockers, you know, on the field on that stage, which meant Billy Turner and Dennis Kelly instead of Josh Nijman and Billy Turner. And I thought it was just a really interesting thing to say. I mean, to credit to Adam Sinovich for saying he made the call, and he wasn't asked about how he felt about that call, but he kind of answered that at the end of his long answer on explaining the decision by saying it is what it is. You know, it there's nothing they can do about it now. If they could go back and do it again, I'm sure that they would do differently. It did not work out, but I thought it was interesting to hear the experience, but also the tough and the hard-nosed part. When the guy that you didn't start because of those reasons is a guy that might be your right tackle this year, or according to Adam Sinovich, a guy that's going to get a look at left or right tackle. He put both of those in there. There's no question that Josh Nyman is getting an opportunity this offseason. And Adam Sinovich laid out the reason why he wasn't on the field for the playoffs, despite playing fairly well for eight starts last year. So if you're Josh Nyman, now you know where you got to get better.
Spoon, he said that, as Ryan mentioned, Josh Nyman will have a chance to compete for both right tackle and left tackle. He also said, I'm pleased with the depth and our young guys across the line, except for I would like a little bit more to shore up the tackle positions. Does that say to you anything about how they're feeling David Bakhtiari will fold back into this as he comes off his recovery? Or is that just coach speak? Or is he right? Even if David Bakhtiari is available and starts every single game this season, do they still need more depth at the tackle position?
Yeah, so one thing I wanted to add about his explaining the decision with Billy Turner is that I don't think that was the difference in the game, was who they started at tackle. We're too many people are assuming that Josh Nyman would have just had this great game, would have stepped into either right tackle or left tackle and been every bit as effective as either Kelly or Turner. I mean, there were all that said with those guys in the lineup, there were still many opportunities to win the game. So I don't feel like that decision was the reason they, you know, a big reason why they lost the game. You know, Kelly had some issues, but Nyman would have had issues too. I mean, the thing that was particularly noticeable was how much more physical San Francisco's defensive line was. And, you know, Stenovich read that right, that this was going to be a beat-em-up game in the trenches. And so he went with that.
Spoon, here's an idea though. If you're going to move Billy Turner, why not move him to right guard and keep Josh Nyman, who wasn't a liability on the field, at left tackle? Because Lucas Patrick was the issue in that game.
Yeah, I mean, I guess so. The question was, are they going to put their five most physical guys? And they felt like probably that, you know, Kelly is definitely in that group. Turner's definitely in that group. And then, yeah, I mean, Patrick, I don't know. I guess they could have done that. That would have been one option. But, you know, he made a decision based on what he thought was trying to deal with San Francisco's strength. So anyway, my point is, yeah, I appreciated him explaining it. You know, it still comes down to special teams and Rodgers missing too many throws in that game. So anyway, onto the tackle thing. Yes, they absolutely have to address the tackle position. You have to have three tackles, I mean, at least. And Dennis Kelly's probably not coming back. He's going to cost too much on the cap, or, you know, I don't think they're going to go forward with him. So they need to find a tackle who they can start getting in the rotation right away. I mean, they don't know what Bakhtiari's future is. And so you always got to be looking a year ahead. And so they may think Bakhtiari is going to play this year, but they don't know what a 2024, and then, you know, Nyman will become a free agent at some point. So yeah, they absolutely have to address it. Whether they have to address it in the first round, I don't think that's necessary, but they do need to address the tackle position. You can't have too many good tackles.
As you said, though, that was not all that lost that San Francisco game. It was a combination of things, namely special teams being a huge one. which is why the Packers have a new special teams coordinator, Rick Bisaccia, who we met yesterday, who was hilarious. Matt LaFleur had told us he was fiery. And when Bisaccia was asked about that, he said, well, I don't know. I'm just short, bald, and Italian. So I guess that means I'm always mad at people.
I get the bald thing. I get the bald thing. That'll set you in a mood.
It apparently does.
Don't ask me how I know.
He lived up to it. He said that he went back and watched every play from last year, but that he also watched every play from the other teams as well. Guys, we've spent so much of this all season thus far talking about Rick Bisaccia and how he might change the special teams, having now heard him speak in person about Packer special teams and what he can do there. What are your initial impressions? Ryan, go.
I thought he was like the opposite of Maurice Drayton. Like Maurice Drayton, you ask him anything on special teams and he'll have a bullet point, step-by-step instructional for you, which I appreciate. I mean, I felt like I learned more from listening to Maurice Drayton last year about special teams than I have in my entire career covering football altogether. It just did not translate on the field. But it was, I mean, he would have all these detailed instructions and all that. Rich Bisaccia was the opposite of that. If you were, I think, you know, the big question going into this first interview with Rich Bisaccia and really the rest of the way until we see it on the field is how do you fix that? You know, you saw that on film, you saw that all year. How is that fixed? And there was really nothing when it came to how. He spoke in generalities. That's not because he doesn't know how. It's because he just he wasn't going to say anything more than the overhead. So I think it'll be very interesting to see how he goes about doing this. As far as the personality, like you said, yeah, definitely saw that. Definitely saw the personality that Matt LaFleur was speaking of. And he's clearly his reputation precedes himself. I mean, he's had a lot of success in this league, producing quality, successful special teams play. So he knows how to do it, but I didn't walk away with much better understanding of how he's going to go about fixing that dumpster fire of a special teams unit. It's just going to be interesting to watch.
To be fair, it's April. He hasn't even met all of his guys yet. But he did talk about being instrumental in bringing in punter Pat O'Donnell. He wanted him. He's wanted him for a while. And now he gets him here in Green Bay. He mentioned Pat O'Donnell has always punted outside and in the cold, so something he's familiar with. He
also and holding,
and
that's not an accident. That's right. Not an accident because Corey Bohorquez could not hold, so yeah. that was significant.
He also talked about currently having three kickers and that he wants to get a look at them through OTAs, but he'll only probably carry two into training camp. So that's some of the logistics. I would imagine that as we get farther into the summer and into training camp, he'll have some more specific answers. This was his first press conference with the Packers media. Spoon, something he said was what he wants his guys to always remember is that they have one play to get it right. They don't have three like the offense does or the defense does, that they have one play. It's something that has sort of the cream has risen to the top, so to speak, when you talk to people about special teams and Packer special teams, is that one of the issues seems to be that the Packer special teams of the past couple of years has operated under the philosophy, it doesn't matter what we do because Aaron Rodgers can save us. It doesn't matter what happens on our one play because he's going to get three plays to fix it. How vital is that mindset? And is that one of the mindsets that really just kind of needed to shift with how the Packers approach special teams?
I think the mindset in Green Bay was, we're not going to spend a lot of money on it. It's not an area that we're as concerned about because, yeah, we have Aaron Rodgers and offense and making sure we have the right guys available there, trying to fix their defense. I think special teams has had short shrift through I don't know how many years in Green Bay. They've just never believed in spending money on special teams coaches and money on special teams players. And it's shown. And I think the message that's shown by bringing in a guy like Bisaccia is that you are putting primary emphasis on special teams now. You're bringing in, you know, one of the top guys. You paid a ton for him. You have signed a new, you know, you signed a veteran punter. You've got some competition at kicker. I think it just puts in place that special teams mean something now. And it's been a long time since that's been the case. And now I was, nobody asked Bisaccia about what impact or what influence he'll have on the guys that they go after, but it's obvious he already has. I mean, I think O'Donnell was someone he probably pointed out. I'm sure the kicker and the special teams kid from the Raiders obviously were his guys. When it comes to cutting the 53-man roster, I have a feeling he's going to be very influential guy. So I think now you've paid that money to this guy, you better listen to him and you better take everything he says seriously and follow what he has to tell you about special teams, because that's gotta be an area. That's the area that you can improve and get your team to the Super Bowl, even if you don't have the offense that you had the year before.
As we've said, Tom Clements, Rich Bisaccia, guys, goodness gracious. I figured out how to spell Bisaccia with ease, but figuring out Rick versus Rich is going to kill me. I get it wrong every time.
Oh, I was Rich bad with the S's and C's. It took me a second to know it was one S and two C's. I wanted to do two S's and one C, and my mind, I had to train my mind on that one.
Yeah, that one just sort of flows out like Mississippi does. But Rick versus Rich is going to keep tripping me up. Rich Bisaccia and Tom Clements, of course, were the big story of this week, talking to them. But I'm just going to kind of give you both a final shot. And don't worry, this is not your final 60 seconds, so you can still talk about something else. But were there any of the other coaches, anything they said that stood out that you thought was noteworthy? Ryan?
Are you putting me on the clock for this? Yeah, I'm used to Spoon going first. It's Spoon's turn. You know, the first thing that comes out is, you know, Ryan Downard talking about Darnell Savage. You know, we asked him a lot about Darnell Savage yesterday because, you know, let's face it, he's got to play better. And he's the type of guy who's got the talent to do that. And if he can get his game up to his talent level, that'd go along. I mean, he's kind of the wild card of this Packers defense. When you look everywhere, you know the proven playmakers. If they can get Darnell Savage to be a flashy playmaker and an impact guy in the back end alongside Adrian Amos, that goes a long, long way to making this a dynamic defense. And yeah, he's a new safeties coach. I mean, he's obviously going to not say anything to the contrary, but he seemed to be pretty high on Darnell Savage. So I think that he's going to be a really interesting piece. From Brian Gutekunst to Ryan Downard to Matt LaFleur, they've all said that Darnell Savage is a guy that can play in the slot. That doesn't mean that he's going to play in the slot, but how they use him and how they get him to be an impact guy, how they get him to match his talent, that's kind of a understated story of this offseason. It go a long way for this defense.
Spoon, same question. Was there anything else that stood out to you versus the coaches we've kind of touched on?
Yeah, and I'm going to go back to Tom Clements. And you
those
guys,
were not the rules, Spoon. I'm just kidding.
Ryan made a reference to it, but I read a lot into this, which, well, I just thought it was something that was extremely enlightening, which was that Clements kept saying that Rodgers is doing a lot of the things that he did under McCarthy, that there's a lot of things in the offense that he did in the McCarthy system, and that there's a lot of carryover, and he's playing, you know, with the play action and everything like that. And I thought that was the way I read it was, you know, it was just sort of an insight to me to how much this offense is a hybrid and not what, Matt LaFleur would necessarily run if Jordan Love was his quarterback. You know, I think it It's very much Rodgers centric, and it is, it also, what really made me laugh about it is here's Rodgers who couldn't, you know, at the end couldn't stand the offense that McCarthy was running, yet here they are running all of, you know, all kinds of stuff that McCarthy put in. You know, McCarthy was the one who put in, and I'm not trying to defend Mike McCarthy. I'm just, this is just an observation. It's like, okay, all that no huddle stuff is what McCarthy and Philbin and all those guys put in for Rodgers. And, you know, all of a sudden it wasn't good enough for him, but, you know, when push comes to shove, he wants to run it. So I don't know. I thought that was just interesting insight. It was really intriguing for a guy who had been in the system to come back to the new system and identify what it was that Rodgers is doing. And so that to me was really enlightening.
Can I go with a quick bonus? How about Jerry Montgomery saying that the defensive line could use a twitchy impact rusher on third down, even after, not that, you know, he's later in his career, but even after adding Jerron Reed. I read that, and I mean, everyone knows receiver, tackle, you know, those are, you know, edge. Those are your primary draft needs. If the board falls right, I wouldn't be surprised at all if they go defensive line in the first round. This is a team that's committed. They've already got potentially their best defensive line in some years, and that's without potentially P.J. Slaton developing, which Jerry Montgomery also said that he expects that to happen in year two. If the board falls right, they're committed to building up this defensive line, and they want more impact interior pass rushing. I wouldn't be surprised if they go first round there.
Well, Jerry Montgomery does that. We got to make that point. Like, I don't know if Jerry Montgomery has been speaking to Brian Gutekunst. You know, Jerry Montgomery wants, and I don't blame him. I agree with you. And I think there will be some guys there.
Yeah, he ain't wrong.
Available. The question is Brian Gutekunst going to take them? You know, Jerry Montgomery probably would like three interior linemen with the first three picks. So, but he's right. He is right. Man, if they could add a first round guy that is, can have some sort of an impact early, they'd be a pretty good, they'd have a nice front seven.
That's like saying the tight end coach came in the room and was like, I want you to put together a trade for Kyle Pitts. Like, just go ahead and work that out for me.
Yeah, right.
We're saying stuff here. Guys, we are only a little over a week to go to the draft. It's going to be exciting between now and then. Lots of speculation, lots of predictions. Only one of them will come true. And we'll have to wait to see what happens. We'll have full coverage for you on Packers News leading up to and through the draft. Guys, I'm going to give you your final 60 seconds. Brewers home opener this weekend. Bucks playoff run starts. And then Packers report for offseason on Monday. So a lot going on in this area this weekend. What's catching your fancy this weekend, Spoon?
I'm not doing much of anything this weekend.
Slacker.
But I do want to say that looking ahead in the next coming weeks to the draft, I think the Packers are going to make a trade. I'm just going to predict that there will be a trade. I'm not saying who it is. I have no idea. I think it'll involve some draft picks. It could involve Jordan Love. It could be a wide receiver. I just think they're going to, the way the NFL is going right now, everybody's looking to add through trades. And I think draft picks are going to be flying around right before the draft. We've already seen, you know, Philadelphia and New Orleans swapping picks. And I wouldn't be surprised if Gutekunst starts looking for a future 23 pick, because it's a really good quarterback class. And he may be looking for a quarterback in 23, you know, depending what happens with Love, depending what happens with Rodgers. Don't be surprised if he does come up with some way to get a first rounder and another first rounder in 23. Because I think this draft isn't necessarily built to you know, take multiple first rounders. But of course, it takes two people. So that's what I'm interested to see, whether something like that happens in the next couple of weeks. I could be completely wrong on it, but my gut tells me that something's going to happen.
Ryan?
I'll take that bet, Spoon. We know Brian Gutekunst loves trading draft picks, and he's got a lot of ammunition high in this draft to do that. I'll say that if there is a player trade, it will not be DK Metcalf. So every Packers fan can let their groan out. I don't see that happening.
Or Debo Samuel. That's not happening either. Yeah,
no. Has that been a rumor? Have I missed that rumor? People actually – no. The 49ers.
Yeah. He scrubbed. He did the disgruntled NFL new thing, which is scrubbing your Instagram of any stuff that – relates to your current team,
which basically he's about to be a Green Bay Packer.
This is why I'm so glad I rely on you guys for all the NFL player social media movement, because that's I can't keep up with that.
So check my Instagram.
Your social media.
You never know if I'm going to scrub Packer news, then you're going to know something's up.
I'll use my 60 seconds to out Cassidy here. So Cassidy, you've been here in Green Bay going on, what, it's April, so 6 months, right? About six mm-hmm. months now. And she has still not indulged in the pleasure of Pizza Ranch.
I did not know what this place was till today.
I was,
you're not yelling at me.
It's been 6 months. I don't know how that's possible. You're not Wisconsin yet unless you go the Pizza Ranch. And you don't ask me. Single dad of three guys here. It's the three sons here. So, you know, it's kind of our go-to, right? But I was stunned. I was stunned to learn that Cassidy has not gotten any of that fried chicken, any of that, you know, that Bronco stuffed crust pizza. I'm a big fan of the Buffalo chicken stuffed crust too. If you got kids, the macaroni cheese stuffed crust, don't ask me how I know. It is a go-to staple in our house. I'm not a buffet guy. You know, I don't like going to buffets. It's just not my thing, but Pizza Ranch is more than a buffet. Pizza Ranch is a godsend. And if you haven't gone, don't be like Cassidy. Hit up some Pizza Ranch.
I'm ashamed. And maybe that's where we should.
It'll be the Green 19 podcast brought to you by Pizza Ranch.
Yes. You know what's funny?
That's where our next episode should be from. And we'll get a sponsor.
You know what's funny? So my twins, Alex and Eli, they're about to partake in their first competitive baseball league. They played a lot of baseball, but their first competitive baseball league, their second grade, and they're on the Pizza Ranch team. And they thought that was like the greatest thing ever. Like you could have told them like, you know, it'd be like the Mets winning the World Series for me. Like it was, that's kind of, it was like the greatest thing they've ever heard in their life. So yeah, no, they'll be very excited about that.
Well, I'm excited to try out Pizza Ranch.
Do it.
I will let you all know how it goes. Guys, I'm going to let y'all go. I know you've got a busy day, a busy week, like I said, as we lead up to the NFL draft, during which the Packers have two first-round picks at 22 and 28. So that'll be exciting. Stay tuned to PackersNews.com for full coverage. As we said, the Packers get ready for the NFL draft and players return for off-season workouts. This has been the Green 19 podcast, brought to you by JS Online and PackersNews.com.